We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Good enough to join us here on Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky. Ariel, thank you very much for joining us here. We really appreciate it. We're not going to put you in a position where you need to defend the sport that you cover, but I do have to ask, with what feels in a very accusatory opening question, what the hell seems to be wrong with Dana White? Why is the information that the rest of the world has not getting through to him?
Well, first off, thank you for having me on. I was about to say thank you for not making me defend the actions of someone else, especially Dana White. And then you essentially made me defend the actions of Dana White. So,
welcome to the show. We want to make you as comfortable as possible.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that I feel like I continue to be put in this position, but I understand. Here we are in a spot where Dana White is hell bent on moving forward with this event, and you know it's a very conflicting feeling for me, because if you look at the world, if you look at everyone around us, if you look at what every single government and health official is saying, you know, if you just kind of read what they're saying, you would come to the conclusion that this event and either, you know, the subsequent events should not be happening. But he feels like it's something that should be happening, and he's saying in kind of vague terms that, you know, they're doing all the things that need to be done. They're taking the precautions. I feel for the fighters. The fighters don't make money if they don't fight, so I understand where they're coming from as well, but I have a hard time coming to the conclusion that the UFC is above all of this. Like, if all the other sports have to shut down, why should they be the ones to forge on, especially when you're talking about, you know, a contact sport? So, yeah, it's a... Trust me, I'm thinking the same things that you guys are.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I just have my one quick follow-up question is, I've always thought of Dana White as an incredibly savvy, forward-thinking media manipulator. Like, I've never been unimpressed by him right up until now. Is he just trying to do the bidding of, let's just say, someone who might spend too much time in a tanning booth because they're personal friends? Explain to me where his motivations are coming from outside of, well, sports is an empty vacuum and I can step into that void and get all the attention.
Yeah, you know, there's no doubt that there's ego involved here. There's no doubt that they want to be the ones to say, you know, we're the first ones to put on a live sporting event and we're going to get this train rolling along. And I do think that there's money involved as well. You know, when the UFC was sold in 2016 for $4.025 billion with a B, you know, no one showed up with a check for $4.025 billion, which means, you know, there's a lot of financing involved. Basically, like, you know, mortgage payments, right? Interest payments, if you will. And going on hiatus for multiple months, I don't think is really in the cards for them. So that's why you're seeing them, you know, do whatever they can possible to try to keep the train rolling along. And, you know, you mentioned the president, they are friends. And I'm sure that there's a part of that involved as well. You know, there's conversations happening between them. Dana has alluded to these conversations as well. So, yeah, it's look, Dana has always marched to the beat of his own drum. He's always been this defined character. Lord knows, you know, we haven't always seen eye to eye. And this is one of those things where, again, you look around at every other sporting organization on the planet, including other fight promoters in the boxing and MMA world. They've all said, you know, no mas. They've all said, we don't feel comfortable doing this. And, you know, the UFC is saying that they do feel comfortable doing it. And what's a little weird about it is we're going back to the mid-90s where the UFC was literally running away from government regulation and holding events on unsanctioned territories. That's what they're doing now. And that seems to be a bit of a strange move considering how far the sport has come in the last 25 years.
How much of this, and I realize this is a speculative question, but I'll ask it anyway. How much of this is him basically saying, I will do this, and how much of it is him saying, let me see if I can do this as sort of a trial balloon to see if he can do more? It's almost like baseball trotted out their bizarre Arizona scheme, largely, I think, to see if people would salute it. And it seems like this is the same thing. Or is he hell-bent on doing more and more shows, not just because the money nut has to be dealt with, but because he wants to be the guy who said, see, I defied the doctors?
Yeah, I don't know if it's about the doctors per se, but I definitely think it's, hey, I'm the one who was able to get this going first. You know, the way he talks about this, it's almost like a personal for him that he's, you know, he's up for it, and he's the one that's going to be able, like, the way he talks about, you know, we've had obstacles. It's like trying to put on a John Jones fight when he fails a drug test. And obviously this is a lot bigger than that. This is unlike anything any of us have ever seen. But what they are planning on doing, you know, the island stuff is a lot of self-promotion. You know, everyone that I've talked to as of right now has not heard anything about this. This is the first time they heard about any of that when he came out and said it yesterday. And so we'll see how that develops. That's going to take some time. But what they are close to finalizing is the location on the West Coast, probably in California, what I'm hearing, close to Fresno, so not too far from you guys, if my geography is correct. And they're basically going to turn that into like a makeshift UFC headquarters where they will hold multiple events there, and it will just be theirs. So they have an event on April 18th, the 25th, the 2nd, the 9th. They're just going to use that facility to hold all these events. Now, there's a lot of challenges and obstacles that come with that, because not only are you holding the events, you're asking fighters to then go train for these events, and there's dangers involved in that, and it's somewhat reckless as well. And then once they get to the location, God forbid someone gets sick. I mean, it's just a massive can of worms unlike anything we've ever seen, but that's what they're planning. That's like the new news. That's the actual news, that they are close to finalizing this location on the West Coast that they will hold multiple events at.
When we talk about other sports commissioners, Ariel, we a lot of times make the point that more than decision makers, they are mouthpieces for ownership, where the real money is, and therefore the real decision-making power. I'm just curious. I don't know as much about the structure of UFC decision-making. Is Dana really the driver of this bus entirely, or are there guys in the shadows with a lot more clout that he is sort of just speaking for?
Well, it's important to make the distinction that Dana isn't a commissioner. Dana is just an owner. He's no different than Joe Lacom or Jerry Jones or James Dolan. He's just a guy who owns an organization. He doesn't oversee the sport, so he's always going to do what's best, at least in his opinion, for himself and the UFC. Now, the UFC's principal owners are Endeavor, formerly known as WME, William Morris Endeavor, and their co-chairmen are Ari Emanuel and Patrick Whitesell. So if there's anyone who's going to be kind of above Dana, so to speak, it's those two. But Dana is the face of the organization, and in many respects, you know, the buck stops with him. You know, they kind of weigh in here and there, but the day-to-day stuff is all him. Now, back in the day, he had the two Fertitta brothers, Lorenzo and Frank Fertitta, who were the majority owners of the UFC, and they were savvy businessmen. They owned the Station Casinos, among many other things, in Nevada. They no longer own the company because they sold it back in 2016, as I said earlier. So now it's on to him, and he's got other people there, but really a lot of this, like, he is the driving force. If he for some reason would have said, you know, we're not doing this, they're not doing it. And you can see, like, he's been the guy going out there and saying that we're going to forge on and we're going to do this and we're going to prove everyone wrong and all this stuff. And a lot of the rhetoric is similar to what we're hearing, you know, in Washington about, you know, attacking the media and saying that we're wimps for suggesting that this shouldn't happen. And that's just kind of the way he's always been. Now it's just being magnified a little more because as of right this moment, they're the only game in town.
Ariel Helwani covers the UFC for ESPN. Good enough to join us here on 95.7 The Game. And there's an awful lot of urgency that needs to be attached to any fight that is going to be taking place a week from Sunday, especially if you build all the infrastructure around it. For a guy who's got it all figured it out, He is not sharing any specifics as to the location of the island, the amount of testing that will be available. He didn't go into details about athletes all getting tested for COVID-19. It's amazing how no details seem to be shared with anyone that has a bright idea of how quickly this is all going to be easily taken care of.
Yeah, well, it's not just not sharing it with us. It's not sharing it with the fighters. Like, none of the fighters have their flights booked. None of them know where it's happening. None of them or the representation know anything about the location. And as you said, we're approaching, it would be on Saturday, April 18th. So we're approaching a week and a half away. And to be clear, the April 18th show is not the island show. The April 18th show would be the show in California somewhere, probably on a tribal land, to where they can just not have to adhere to any of the rules of the state athletic commissions. For example, if they would want to hold an event at, say, the Chase Center or the Staples Center or the Barclays Center, MSG, they would have to adhere to the rules and regulations of the state athletic commissions, New York State, California State, et cetera. But if they go to a tribal land, which kind of, you know, goes by the rules of the tribal land, they don't have to follow those rules. Now, this creates a very controversial set of circumstances because UFC hasn't done something like this, like I said, since the 90s when they were being banned left and right by all these states.
I mean, isn't that enough red flags for people right there? Like, the only way we can do this is if we go somewhere where laws do not apply.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're right. I feel the same way. And it's weird because our sport has come a very long way in a very short amount of time. And, you know, now the sport is on ESPN and it's getting mainstream coverage. You know, 10 years ago, no one was covering MMA, certainly not making like a full-time living doing it. We're still in the embryonic stages of this sport. And there's a lot of people who are saying, like, wait a second, we're literally going back to the first year, like when they were running away. There was an event in 1997 scheduled to have a UFC 12 in Buffalo, New York. 2 days before the event, the New York State Athletic Commission banned the UFC from being there. And so they then moved it to Oregon. And then the Oregon State Athletic Commission banned it. Then they held the event on hours' notice in Dothan, Alabama, 200 miles away from Birmingham, Alabama. That's what we're doing now. Like, that's what we've become. And there's a lot of people who cover the sport and who are around the sport who are saying maybe this isn't the best look.
The California event, even if they find a tribal land where this might work, aren't they still subject to sort of to directives from the governor? And wouldn't this fly sort of in the face of everything the governor has sort of put into place in terms of shelter in place, in terms of quarantine? How do they get around that?
So that's where things get really interesting. So I reached out to the California State Athletic Commission, who, in my opinion, are the gold standard as far as combat regulation are concerned. Andy Foster, their executive director, is phenomenal at his job. And right now, they're saying that this is above their pay grade. To your point, this is now, you know, a governor issue, right? This is not like an MMA / boxing issue. This is about, you know, lockdowns and rules and regulations regarding leaving your house and whatnot. And honestly, I don't know the answer to that question. This is all very strange because California isn't overseeing it. So they're not, you know, answering any questions. And when I say California, I mean the California State Athletic Commission. They're not answering any questions about it because it's not their event. So it's going to be really interesting. Now, I'm not an expert when it comes to tribal lands, but I do know that when you hold an event on a tribal land, either you're adhering to their own rules and regulations or you self-regulate. And this particular land that I'm hearing that they're going to, which is around 20 miles or so from Fresno, they don't have a commission attached to them. They don't have any sort of governing body. So the UFC would basically like regulate themselves. And as far as like people leaving and what you're saying, you know, non-essential work and whatnot, how do they get around that? I have no idea. I don't even know if they know. And that's probably why they're not telling anyone where this is.
This is, as I understand, going to be a pay-per-view event. Has there been any discussion about just the fact that, you know, the disposable income is being stripped from people all over the country? Is there concern about how that could affect pay-per-view buys, or do they expect that the sort of only game in town aspect gives them an edge?
So a reporter asked Dana White this question a couple of days ago. Just for the record, Dana doesn't talk to me, and that's a whole other set of worms.
Right.
So, you know, so I'm having to answer a lot of questions for his mindset when I don't have access to the man because he doesn't like me. So I just want to make that very clear. but he did.
Wait, seriously, he doesn't talk to you? He won't grant you an interview, and you're one of the foremost people covering the sport?
No, he doesn't talk to me. He has me blocked on every form of social media. So you can understand the awkwardness of trying to defend his actions here, because the man doesn't like me, and it's well documented, you know, the things that he's done to me and trying to ruin my career. So, you know, that is what it is. I try to keep it all straight and be as unbiased as possible. And I feel for the fighters in this case, because I respect them greatly. To me, I'm able to separate the two. But to answer your question, someone did ask him, and he said, you know, we've gone through so many hoops to try to make this happen. It's obviously a huge expense that we can't afford to give it away for free. I had suggested, you know, if they would put this on free television, whether it's ESPN or ABC, could you imagine all the people that would watch it? And there are other people who are saying to me, like, oh, these pay-per-view buys are going to be through the roof because no one else has anything to do. And I would strongly argue against that for two reasons. Number one, just yesterday there was a concert that was announced that's going to be like having Paul McCartney and Lady Gaga and all these famous people, Stevie Wonder, on the same night. So the idea that there's nothing going on goes out the window. Then you can say, all right, MMA fans, that's not their demographic, great. But to your point, $65 in this time for a good card, but not like an A++ card, is a bit of a tough sell. So I don't think anyone's going to be like, oh, I'm so bored, I'm going to pay $65 for a UFC pay-per-view. There's plenty of other things that you'd want to keep your money for. So, yeah, that in its own right is a questionable decision, but they feel like they've invested too much to just give this one away for free.
Ariel Helwani here, and it's probably unfair to ask you to surmise the entirety of the UFC fan base in a simple sentence, but, like, is there any chance that the fan base rejects this based on how bad of an idea it is, or will they follow dear leader wherever he says we're going to have Fight Club tonight?
I think that there are fans who are saying that, you know, I need the entertainment. And I think that there are fans who are saying this is weird and this is turning me off. I mean, it has been a very divisive topic. Again, the entertainment argument is a bit weird for me because, you know, I get it. You know, people want something to do, but, like, this is not necessary. This is not essential, right? You know, when you're talking about a sport that would require a lot of medical attention, do you want, you know, doctors to be worried about fighters on that night, or do you want them to be worried about people who are sick, you know? So, like, it's a bit of a selfish thing saying, I need something to do on April 18th. Like, I'm sure we can all figure something out. So the media has been very vocal about it. Obviously, some fans, you know, Twitter isn't the best gauge for this sort of thing, but I've heard from fans who have said, you know, that they like it, that they don't like it. But the most interesting thing to me has been the fighters who have all said, like, where do I go? How do I sign up? I need the money. I don't get paid if I don't fight, all that stuff and more. And I feel for them because they're right. They don't. But a lot of other people, you know, don't get paid if they don't work. And so they're faced with this as well. And the worst part about it for me is not just the fight itself. It's the training for the fights. You can't train alone. It's not like you can go for a run. If you train for a fight, you need trainers there and whatnot. And so you're opening up that, you know, set of circumstances where you could be infecting other people who go back home to their families, et cetera.
Yeah, I think it's ridiculous that they're doing it. I think it's ridiculous that they just tried to do a WrestleMania, and it just seems, you know, just what is the end game here? What is the purpose? It just it seems so short-sighted where there are officially bigger things that should have our full attention. Normally, when it comes to the UFC and a conversation about something crazy, it's more like this. How about this story today where a fighter who was a UFC fighter was laying in his bed and some guy broke into his home. And I guess if you're going to be a burglar breaking into any random home, you probably don't want to pick the UFC fighter. But apparently the burglar gave this UFC fighter everything he wanted and a little bit more. What can you tell us about this Anthony Smith story from over the weekend? I just clicked on this on ESPN.
Yeah, this is a wild story. I spoke to Anthony yesterday about this. And Anthony, in case you don't know, is one of the best fighters on the planet. He went 25 minutes with John Jones, who's considered the greatest of all time, a little over a year ago. And so he was sleeping in his home in Nebraska and woke up at around 4 a.m. to the sound of someone in his house yelling from the top of of his lungs. And they got into like a massive brawl in his house. He has three daughters. He has a wife, a mother-in-law who lives with him as well. And again, this is a guy who's really, really talented. He's a pro fighter who fought for the belt a year ago and said he couldn't put the guy away. The guy, he said, probably was around 165, 170. Anthony probably around 220. and the guy just would not stop. And finally, the cops came and they apprehended him, and he was taken to a hospital because his injuries were pretty bad. You can imagine what Anthony was trying to do to put him away. And then the story gets really bizarre because apparently, according to Anthony, the intruder's father went to the hospital the next morning and like snuck him out, like took him out of the hospital. And so that's truly bizarre as well. But thankfully, he didn't get hurt. His family didn't get hurt. And, you know, all you could say is, you know, I guess that guy chose the wrong house, because I can't imagine what would happen if he walked into my house. I don't know what I would do in that situation. But he happened to walk into a top-level MMA fighter's house, and he paid the price.
I mean, well, but he also gave the guy everything he wanted and a little bit more. Sounds like a case of all hopped up on goofballs to me, and that's my professional analysis of the whole thing. We really appreciate your time today, Ariel. Thank you very much for joining us. What a crazy situation. What a crazy sport you're covering right now. We'll stay tuned. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Good to have him on, indeed. We got Pedro Gomez coming up at 3:30. Don Nelson today at 5 o'clock and a Tuesday trifecta a little bit later on. Look, again, there is an element of people out there who are so married to stupid party politics talking points that they're not thinking for themselves anymore. You know, to say that, you know, let's live in fear for the next year, because the media says so. Folks, the media hasn't said anything. The media is relaying information to you from doctors, to the point where there are a lot of people who are saying we need to stop covering political statements and rallies and just go live to a doctor when a doctor's got a microphone in their hand. To remove politics from this is to awaken as to what is really going on here. And what is going on here is an invisible, involuntary disease that has absolutely no regard for who it might infect. And it might infect you from someone who's not even showing any symptoms. So the whole world is operating under the premise of we do not know. Like, no one needs to text me any, well, you have this as a percentage of overdosing on cocaine, and you don't see us stamping out drugs like that. But look, that's voluntary. Everyone who's blown a line of coke knows that they were doing it as they were doing it, and you made that choice to do it. This is involuntary.
And by the way, that's not true. There's anti-drug efforts everywhere. There's drug treatment efforts everywhere.
It's everywhere.
People say things like, this many people died in a car crash, but we're not banning car. No, but we're constantly working to make them safer. We're constantly implementing laws and regulations and adding to vehicles to make things safer for us. We do all that stuff. The fact that other people die other ways doesn't mean we shouldn't try to stop them from dying.
Somebody's like, these are all your opinions, man. They're informed opinions. To have opinions otherwise come from the label of uninformed. It's just that simple. There's a fork in the road. There is no, I'm going to forge my own path through this. You're either right or wrong. Period. End of story. If you're doing anything other than sheltering in place right now and realizing that sports doesn't mean as much this week than any other week you've ever breathed the breath in your life, you're doing it wrong. So I invite you to do it right with us, and we're going to be doing it right up until about 6 o'clock tonight. We got Don Nelson joining us at 5 o'clock. I guarantee you that he wouldn't be working through all this. I guarantee that. Everyone knows it's a crazy time out there, and how you're getting the show depends on where you're listening to it. If you got the radio.com app, you can listen to it anywhere. Just make sure you favorite 95.7 The Game on your smartphone. Just say, hey, Alexa, or hey, Google, play 95.7 The Game, and boom, it's going to happen. Your calls, 888-957-9570. We just heard an awful lot from Ariel Helwani on a sport that is apparently impervious to science, reality, or germs. Wow, that's pretty impressive. All of it brought to you by Fremont Bank, full service banking, no compromises. Here's what I got for you concerning May. And I know that he's talking about doing this in an impenetrable bubble of safety that doesn't exist really anywhere on the planet. But we'll get to the plan for Major League Baseball here in a second. Over back in observable reality, where San Francisco Unified School District is pretty much running its year, they just waved the flag on the remaining school year. They've closed. San Francisco Unified School District sites will remain closed for the rest of the school year. That's from now until June 2nd. Interactive teacher-led learning starts on Monday, boys and girls, April 13th. You'll be back to whatever normal is, normal for now anyways. To be clear, the school year has not ended, but it is formally transitioned from in-person classroom instruction to instruction and support online. So that's the rest of April and all of May. So when baseball's talking about, in May, well, I mean, man, it's like they have some other sort of master that they're trying to serve other than what might be the right thing to do for everyone's safety. And again, text line saying, you know, the media does nothing but speak of death numbers and projected death cases. Why not talk about recovered cases? Talk about how it's the 16th straight day of cases dropping in Italy. Because the Italy model no longer applies to us. Any chance we wanted to look like that passed us a long time ago. We've so soared. How about this? In the world, you'd be safer against coronavirus in any other established nation in the world outside of the United States. We are the worst place in the world to be for coronavirus. We have over of a quarter of the entire world's cases right now. We blow Italy away. Italy hasn't even had 140,000 cases. We'll be at 400,000 by the time this show ends today. So there it is. You know, there it is. Your Italian model that you're looking for some good news in, that ship sailed. The worst of Italy is coming to America. All models say that April 15th could be a day where, you know, 10,000 people die in one day. Like, I'm sorry that none of these numbers are robust or sexy enough to really have some of your full attention.
Yeah, the answer to the original question, why isn't the media talking about recovered cases? It's because people still aren't taking this seriously enough, so the reporting is around how serious it is. I mean, that's how media works. It's the news. The news is not, oh, it's okay because 97% of people don't die. The news is 3% of people who get this dying is a huge, disastrous number, and we're not doing enough to stop it. That's the news. That's what gets reported.
More to the point, the numbers are only of detected cases, and everybody who has been on the front line of this and who understands the way pandemics work say that what's reported is not nearly what's out there. And part of the problem with tracking this has been that nobody, that there aren't enough tests to determine how many people actually are carriers. And more to the point, there are people who are showing are asymptomatic and are carriers. So it's not so much what's known, it's the massive amount of what isn't known for anybody to make any kind of conclusion that things are getting better, because we still aren't on top of this by any way, shape, or form. And the only real country that has shown success with dealing with this was South Korea, which has been aggressive since this started back around the start of the year. So
and was so far ahead of us on testing in the early going that they're really not comparable to what is happening in America. And the test point, by the way, brings us to back to baseball, because there's part of this absurd plan, which is a non-starter in so many ways, but part of it is definitely that we're going to have enough testing to test everybody and have results very quickly, and don't worry, it's not going to take away from the rest of the country. And that's just, for that to happen in the next month is impossible. We are so far behind on testing in this country that the idea that baseball could just find a couple thousand tests and it'd have to be more than that because people have to be tested over and over again because they could have picked it up and be asymptomatic at any time.
Here's the thing. Does anybody plan on going out to dinner in between any of these games?
Right. The notion that they are going to magically test all of baseball, no problem, and it's not going to take tests from people who need it elsewhere in America is ridiculous. And perhaps the most ridiculous thing is not even the disease, the problems that the disease are causing. It's the fact that the owners or whoever is in charge of this think that they can literally kidnap their workforce. The idea of having guys spend 4.5 months in isolation away from their families in a bubble in Arizona is ridiculous.
Right. It's a baseball season, not a tour. It's not a tour of duty. It's a baseball season.
Exactly. They're at-will employees. They're not enlisted. You can't just make them do whatever you want to do all the time. That's crazy.
Here's the plan from Jeff Passan. 30 teams play games at stadiums with no fans in the Phoenix area, including the Arizona Diamondbacks Chase Field and 10 spring training facilities and perhaps other nearby fields. Players, coaching staff, and other essential personnel would be sequestered at local hotels for up to 4.5 months. They would live in relative isolation and travel only to and from the stadium. Passan says, quote, "While the possibility of player or staff member testing positive for the coronavirus exists, even in a secured setting, officials do not believe that a positive test alone would necessarily be cause to quarantine an entire team or shut down the season," according to the source. The plan would include teams carrying significantly expanded rosters to account for the possibility of players testing positive despite the isolation, as well as to counteract the heat in Phoenix, which could grow problematic during the summer. I mean, oh, heat stroke.
Come on.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I think this was always just a trial balloon to see if people would sign off on it. And it's pretty clear that, like the UFC situation and like the NBA situation, nobody wants to sign off on it. And that's why baseball put out that statement last night, backing off of it, saying, we're just studying things. I mean, I think if there wasn't such a hue and outcry about the absurdity of the idea, they'd have tried to forge ahead. And you would have had a far greater disaster than just the PR disaster they're having today. But I think there's a level of cynicism about all of these things in that they toss them out there and to see what people are going to do about it, because there really is no point in holding any event, if you're a promoter, if everybody hates the idea. And I think that's what they're doing. They're trying to promote this as a notion that, well, we're in there trying to give you what you want. And mostly what people want is for there to be sports without danger. And nobody can make that promise.
And that's the problem, is every idea it seems absurd because every idea is absurd. Because if you're thinking about restarting your league in the next month or two, you're being ridiculous.
It seems like the show is content with no sports and no social activity for the next couple of months. Yes! I mean, what more do you want to say? Yes! Cancel it all!
Yeah, content might not be the right word. This isn't what we wanted to happen. Obviously, it's not what we wanted to happen. We want to talk about sports all damn day. That's why we do this for a living. But we also don't want to do that at the cost of literally thousands of lives.
Yeah, I'd much rather my mom not die in Florida than another inning of baseball ever get played in my lifetime. Now, the Cubs won the whole thing in 2016, and maybe if they hadn't, I wouldn't feel that way. But they did, and so here it is how I feel. I don't care if there's an inning of baseball this year. I don't care if anyone else hits a three-pointer for the rest of this year. I don't care who the Niners draft. I don't care if there's another game played. I don't care about any of it. If it does happen, we'll react to it. We'll go, okay, sure, that's great. But what does it matter in the world right now? Not a lick. Not a lick. I don't care. I don't care. And I'll tell you what, this sports is smart enough to evolve with whatever the hell is out there in the world. Just because the station says it's a sports station, this has never just been a sports show. Never has been, never will be. Why would you think it would? Like, I mean, just, I don't know what, I think some of you never had a tough day in your life, and you never been in a fight, and the only way you have to act tough is behind a keyboard talking tough. And so everyone's going to talk tough right now. The truth of you, half of you don't even have the guts of whatever nurse clocked in to his or her shift in an ER hospital today. Per capita numbers are all that matter. You got to look at the per capita numbers. Everyone just keeps moving the goalposts no matter what, no matter what we're talking about. Here's the thing. Per capita means it's dangerous still. But I'm looking for more decimal points removed before I take it seriously. Okay, you and your whole family go out, get coughed on, and maybe grandma dies. I can't help you anymore. Stay inside. Do it for months. Probably not come out until the end of the year. Sprechen Sie Deutsch? You get it? This ain't over anytime soon. Somebody who cured smallpox last week said, and I quote, "If people are telling you this will be over this summer, they've been misleading you or they're misinformed. 2 years. That doesn't mean elements of the world won't come back to normal before then. Life will find a way to go on. But there is going to be many, many active hotspots and flare-ups. New York City, major trouble. New Orleans, major trouble. The entire state of Florida, probably the whole state of Texas, in major, major trouble of getting back to normal anytime soon." That's it. The world that you used to live in no longer exists. Period, end of story, write it down and start taking notes and act accordingly. Grow up. Some of you should be ashamed of yourselves. Ray, take it away.
Okay, I will. I think this is the hardest thing anybody of the last two, maybe three generations have had to face. I mean, the last thing that basically left you in, with knots in your stomach every day was World War II.
Vietnam.
I wasn't here for it.
No, more than because there was not a sense that Vietnam was going to invade the United States at any point.
Right. Okay.
Vietnam was an outrage, but it wasn't
coming to your home near you.
Yeah.
Right. I was just curious.
Yeah, the problem here is that people desperately want things not to be like this, but they are. And I think, it's hard for people to just sort of say, well, cancel everything. Well, because they have no reference point for it. I mean, this is more fear, I think, than it is, aggressive ignorance to me. It's just people are afraid that this is going to be how things are going to be for an indeterminate a number of months, and it frightens the hell out of them. And the idea that sports was always an anchor that you could rely on is no longer true for the reasons we talked about earlier. It's just sports is, for the moment, part of the problem in that if you have sports, you create another potential hotspot with every game you have. Whereas in World War II and World War I, the government basically said, oh, play the games because people will find them entertaining. Well, the problem is games against an enemy like the virus are completely counterindicated. You don't want to do that. So people understand that there aren't going to be games. They just don't know what to do with that information because it's too big to deal with right now. So I get why people are weird about it, but it doesn't change the reality that these are the weird times. And just strap in, tape down the windows. That's the deal.
Yeah, I think it's hard to adjust to there not being any options, right? But that's where we are. There's a natural human instinct to say, well, we can deal with this. Let's figure out how. But when the solution is essentially inaction, it's hard to wrap your head around.
Right. And, people who want to say, it's easy for you guys to talk about all this. You still have your jobs. I mean, today, you're right about that.
Yeah.
Today, we still have our jobs. Hey, how many weeks in a row does our sales department need to get kicked in the teeth for that to not be the reality? I mean, look, none of us are secure. No one is secure. And yet, do you hear me arguing against your best interests for my best interests? My best interests are baseball starts tomorrow. My right. best interests are football's happening, no doubt about it. My best interests are the Golden State Warriors slip into the NBA Finals somehow after all this year, and we'll see you at Chase Center, everybody. Ah! Those are my best interests. Do you hear me talking about my best interests being served here? You don't hear us, any of us, you don't hear me, Matt, Ray, any of us talking about how, man, sports are really important, especially to guys like us, so we need to get this going on again. You're out of your minds. You're out of your minds. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. And someone's like, here, we're building our immunities up to this virus. No, you're not. There's not a single strand of DNA in human recorded history that has immunity to this virus. It's a novel virus. Novel virus means no one has immunity. No one except someone who's maybe already had it. We don't know. We don't even know that.
Yes, and asymptomatic carriers are not immune. That's what makes this so dangerous. They just don't happen to have symptoms for reasons we don't entirely understand yet. That's why it's a further danger, not a comfort. It's not like everyone who is asymptomatic is passing around immunity. That's not a thing that's happening.
It's, again, it's the not knowing what's going on today, not being able to trust sources of information that you would assume would be trustworthy under normal circumstances. And it's the fact that, especially in sports, which lives off a schedule, to have something that can't be scheduled, you know, the return to normalcy can't be scheduled, the return to games can't be scheduled. All there is this empty prairie of sort of entertainment nothingness out there that I think people simply can't get their heads around because they have no frame of reference for it. And I think that's what makes people freak out about this is, no, the indomitable will of, you know, our spirit as a species. No, the problem is it's all unknown. And there's something about staring into a void that is more upsetting than staring into the eyes of a danger you know and can see. I think that's what we're looking at.
Twitter CEO Jack Dempsey is pledging $1 billion. Jack on Twitter, donating $1 billion to help coronavirus. I'll tell you what, save every single penny and just throw one guy off Twitter. I won't even say who that is. Everyone can come up with their own conclusion. You throw one guy off Twitter, that does a lot more than $1 billion thrown at this equation. I'm dead serious. Because misinformation, goofy political nonsense is going to get people killed, especially if the only shot you got at re-election is to weaponize this politically, which he's trying to do every single day of his life.
Already has gotten people killed.
Exactly. Jeff Passan's plan, plan, Major League Baseball's plan, relayed by Jeff Passan, comes with a whole bunch of things that, by the way, if they were implemented right now, would already render this not baseball. This ain't baseball. I mean, the sport that Jeff Passan's trying to fit, or not Jeff Passan, but the sport, baseball's trying to fit itself into an untenable scenario by changing the very soul and nature of the game, which means it ain't even Major League Baseball anymore, implementing an electronic strike zone and allowing plate umpires to maintain sufficient distance from the catcher and batter. All right, well, you know, robot umps may be coming anyways. No mound visits from the pitcher and catcher going on. Okay, yeah, that's definitely going to halt the virus. Are they going to change together in the same
locker?
They're
going to shower one at a time after
exactly,
the game?
Exactly. Are pitchers going to be forbidden from licking their fingers before they ever touch a ball? Does anybody ever sneeze? I think Susan Slesser knocked it out of the park. She said, you know, baseball, from a hygienic just point of view, is disgusting.
Yeah.
Baseball is a hygienically disgusting sport. You got guys spitting all over themselves with sunflower seeds, spit everywhere, rubbing the same ball, throwing it around, bats, ball. I mean, it's gross. All sports are very germy, baseball among them. And there's no way to do it. Regular use of on-field microphones by players.
See, that's just marketing.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Got nothing to do with safety.
Players sitting in the empty stands 6 feet apart. Oh, so we're not going to even do dugouts anymore. God. Everyone can spread out and sit in the entire – look, it's so stupid.
How about a double play? Do they have to stay 6 feet apart?
Exactly. Should I Clorox wipe down this baseball as it goes from 6 to 4 to 3? Is there a Clorox wipe at second base tube that he wipes the ball down with before he throws it on to first base?
A ball hit to right center. Can only one of the outfielders run towards it?
Exactly.
Just the idea that a catcher's got to stand next to a series of guys for 9 innings. That's all you – I mean, look, they didn't even – under the, one of the plans that they were discussing and then floated with Passan was the idea that umpires would not situate themselves behind the catcher. Well, what about the catcher? You know, he's going to be behind basically every hitter on the other team every day. You know, how is that safe under these conditions? I mean, that those are the things that, you know, you can't get around, because sports is about human contact. You know, guys bumping into each other, you know, guys deliberately trying to get in each other's way. I mean, it's one of the reasons why Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell tested positive was because games got played.
I mean, look, Major League Baseball fans flipped out when they started social distancing around home plate and scoring plays. What do you mean you can't block the plate anymore? We flipped out over the Buster Posey rule. This isn't even Major League Baseball. Now you really want to have a nothing like Major League Baseball being played to satisfy no fans in attendance. Look, it's insane. It ain't going to happen. Period. End of story. All the science says these people are blowing smoke. 888-957-9570. We're brought to you by O'Donnell Financial, because planning is a process for loans, investments, insurance, or retirement. Call Greg O'Donnell, 866-946-2300. That's 866-496-2300, 866-496-2300, or at O'DonnellFinancialGroup.com. We've got Pedro Gomez from ESPN joining us at 3:30. Don Nelson comes up at 5 o'clock later today. 888-957-9570. Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.